Good morning.
I am not Jerry Flakus as the board rep on your order of service. I'm Al. I want to welcome you all to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church today. I hope you've had a week of warmth and friendship. I want to let you know that today we have a guest speaker with us, and I'll give you some information on him in a moment, but also to alert you that this is a formal day for us. It is our second big celebration of our 15th anniversary. So we started as a church in concept 97-ish, and actually formed in 98. So it's a big day for all of us. With that said, we're hoping to bring you a combination of heart, head, and mind today. You can let us know if we've done that after the service in the coffee hour. Those of you that ate lots of pancakes and lots of Gorel's homemade maple syrup, we can see you if you're snoozing. But we'll be kind. There are a variety of announcements in your order of service. Please take the time to look at those. I do want to highlight a couple of things, however, for you quickly. Our discussion of the book, A House for Hope, which was to start this evening, we are going to postpone due to the challenge of the weather that's coming, and for those that are driving, you'll get further information from Reverend Jim. If you are visiting us today, and if you haven't yet, please consider signing our guest book in the lobby. We'd certainly appreciate that. It's our way of connecting with you. It's our way of reaching out and hoping to find a way to explore together. So please consider doing that. There is a new member ceremony next Sunday. So if you've have been attending for a while, have gone through the path to membership, and would like to join and be part of that service, please find me after the service. I know I'm meeting with a couple of you already. Other announcements, we're good with that. Yes, sir. Excellent. If you would take a moment to say hello to one another. Thank you. If you're visiting us today with your children, it's our custom for the children to remain in the service until the story for all ages, at which point they'll go off to their various religious education classrooms. Your child, if you're visiting with us, is welcome to join that or to stay in the service, whatever fits best for you. You're also welcome to join in that classroom if that fits your pleasure. Classes will end at about 11:15, so at that point it's helpful if you would go bring your kids into the throng of community rather than leaving them in with the teachers. We're always excited and pleased to get to know our guests, so if you're visiting us today and you'd like to stand up and say hello, we'd sure appreciate that, or if you've brought someone and you'd like to introduce them, this would be the time to do so. Welcome, Anna. Excellent. Hi, Haley. All right, so, oh, yes. Welcome. After our service, everyone is cordially invited to join us in the social hall. You'll find it a mixture of syrup and bacon and pancake smell. If you've brought electronics, please put them on stun. And now, before I introduce Scott, I'd like to invite Lynn Smith to come up.
Good morning. I've been a longtime member of LCUC from the get-go, so we're celebrating 15 years. That's exciting. I don't think we've ever eaten pancakes like we did this morning, so thanks to Paul and Paul for organizing that. I've been a member here for 15 years. I've been on the board for 6 years. I've been president for a couple years. I was the first volunteer director of religious education. Done a lot of things here. And I've known and worked with all of our 11 ministers over the course of our 15-year history. Do the math. It's a lot of ministers. And I am so very thankful and excited that we are calling a full-time minister. Thanks to the work of our interim minister, Reverend James Hobart, who has guided us to this transition. He has helped us understand why the way we have done things in the past may not be serving us well at this time, and helped us make the necessary changes that pave the way for full-time ministry. Full-time ministry has been an expressed dream and vision of this congregation for 15 years. It is a great achievement, and I feel really compelled to reflect on this milestone. As much as this church has gained from the talents and insights of the part-time ministers we've had, part-time ministry has been less than ideal for many reasons. The pool of ministerial candidates for a part-time position has been and remains limited and small, as most ministers are looking for a full-time position. Because of this, we have not always been able to hire a minister that is a good fit for our congregation. Our part-time ministers have all commuted to our area. Ministers do not move to an area for a part-time position, as it is viewed as short-term. Thus, our ministers have not been connected to us geographically and have not been able to help us grow to be a stronger presence in our larger community. For all of us who have been deeply involved with this church, it has taken incredible time and effort over the past 15 years to search for, to hire, and then orient a new minister to our congregation. It seems like the minister just becomes familiar with us when it's time to say goodbye. There's a sense of burnout with this process. Having such frequent ministerial change has affected visitor, friend, and member perceptions of our church. This has limited our ability to grow in membership and depth. And by depth, I mean is like who we are here and who we are together. Clearly, our part-time ministers have been unable to meet all of our ministry needs and are unable to participate fully in the life of our congregation simply due to the time constraints of a part-time position. So, full-time ministry is really a gift for lots of reasons. There's a much larger pool of ministerial candidates to choose from for full-time ministry. This will help ensure that we find a minister who fits with our congregation. Our full-time minister will live in our area and be more of a presence to us and our larger community. Think of the joy and energy we'll gain when we free up the time and effort we have had to extend replacing ministers. Given the inherent longevity of a called full-time minister, we can free up our time and effort to provide greater and deeper service to our church and to our world community, as we'll no longer need to spend time and effort in searching for, hiring, and orienting a new minister. Our new minister will be able to meet our ministerial needs, including pastoral care. He or she will be more instrumental with church life, such as working with the board, helping with leadership development, religious education, stewardship, etc. We'll be able to develop a deeper, ongoing relationship with our full-time minister. Not all of us cherish diversity in the pulpit. This will still occur. Full-time ministers are not in the pulpit every Sunday. Member involvement with worship will continue. I'm sure we'll have Scott back with us. As Reverend James Hobart has pointed out, full-time ministry is certainly only a means and not an end to itself. and I am extremely grateful to our Ministerial Search Committee. If you guys wouldn't mind standing up, we've got John Kuhn, Yvonne Fort, Kim Sewer, Tammy Wolfgram, Linda Franzblau, Susan Atkinson, and Robert Ayler, who is not here. For all, you guys are really doing an incredible job helping with this search. And thanks to our church board and Barbara Hoel, our president, for all the work that they've done, and Reverend James Hobart. Please join Phil and I as we increase our pledge to help make this dream and vision of a called full-time minister a reality, and consider pledging at the visionary level this year. What a wonderful gift to our church and the world at large. Thank you.
Thanks, Lynn. And from the stewardship gang, our leader, I would ask Sue if you could come up for a quick second here.
Good morning. Today not only represents the second celebration of our 15th year, but it also represents the kickoff of our 2013-2014 stewardship campaign. This year we are doing another leap of faith. I was not here when you did your original leap of faith, when you bought this building. But it is a leap of faith in some ways similar to that vision, where all of you collectively embraced and supported financial commitment in order to buy this building. The important driving message at that time was deciding to come together to commit to our collective future in a deep financial manner. To quote, "We must invest in our future and buy a building for our future church community." At the beginning of this pledge season, we are excited to let you know that 32 members have already submitted their pledge. And of those 32 members, 75% have increased their pledges over last year. I'm sure that many of you noticed the poster that was done by Barbara Hoel when you came in today. And I do want to thank Barbara. I think she's just done an amazing job with the visuals and collaterals for this campaign. On the table is a rendition that celebrates the 15-year anniversary. If you have submitted your pledge, or when you submit your pledge, please sign that poster. We would like to make it a permanent fixture representing the 15 years of the church and our call for a full-time minister. Thank you.
Okay, so it's an emotional time for us. We know a few visionaries said, we need this church in this community. We know over the years that we had a vision of a permanent space, a full-time minister, solid, connected, effective social action. Each goal we set, we get to, we set another. This is a significant, exciting stage for us. The idea 7 years ago of moving away from the challenge of holding service in somebody else's church, often with somebody else's minister, in an evening, was a challenge in terms of building our community. Recognizing that, building towards that in our strategic planning, the decision was made, building for a full-time minister. This picture over here represents that leap of faith. A small number of people made that leap of faith, having made that leap of faith successfully, we were able to do more. That's where we are today. But the challenge, the challenge of being able to leap over tall buildings with a single bound. We need a superhero. I would suggest the superhero is among us. We need Stewardship Man.
Holy dollars, Batwoman! Hi, I'm Stewardship Man. And I would love to stay and chat, but based on those numbers, I have to get busy. You know, many of us superheroes, all of us, we all look for the search for truth and justice. And I think many of us have found it right here at LCUC. But in order to complete that vision, we need a full-time pastor. So based on those early results, Batman, I need to find that ministerial search committee.
Yes, you do.
You know why? Because we are going to do this, aren't we? We are going to do this.
Settle down. I'm thrilled to introduce Scott to you today. Many of you that have been here have had the pleasure, as I have, of hearing his words and joining in his heart and soul and what he brings to us. A little background for you. The Reverend Scott Prinster is currently writing his dissertation at the University of Wisconsin on the historical relationship between religion and science in the United States. Scott served in congregations in Southwest Michigan and in Madison, as well as teaching English for 2 years at the Unitarian Seminary in Transylvania. I think that's where he met Mark. Before attending seminary, his background was in physics, and he worked as a NASA contractor for the space program. While writing his dissertation, he tries to make time to play old-time and bluegrass music on his fiddle and banjo. Many of you will, like me, decide that you are a child of all ages and join in his child of all ages story as well. So I welcome Scott to us, and I think you guys are in for a treat.
Thank you, Al. Good morning. We have an important interlude before we continue with the service. first stewardship man, and now this. It's a tough act to follow. Congratulations on 15 years of providing a badly needed voice for free religion in this part of the state. Your hard work, as Lynn noted, has borne fruit and is very much appreciated. I'm so proud of all that you have done as a community. We have gathered not to petition the universe to magically change our circumstances, not to be singled out for special blessings, but to see our lives with new eyes and to tell one more story about our journey's meaning. May the spirit of clarity and gratitude pervade this community of seekers that we recognize and cultivate our abundant lives. I'd like to invite you to rise as you're able and join in singing together our opening hymn, number 322 in your gray hymn book, Thanks Be for These. While you have your hymn books open, I invite you to turn to the back for our congregational ingathering number 443. We arrive out of many singular rooms, walking over the branching streets. We enlarge our voices in common speaking and singing. Our eyes reclaim the remembered faces, their voices stir the surrounding air. This is the reason of cities, of homes, of assemblies in the houses of worship. It is good to be with one another. invite any young people of any age to come on down. Well, whenever I visit congregations, I always bring my friend with me. Do any of you remember who this is? Fudgy Bear. Good job, you guys. Maybe later. I need him to keep me company up here. I'm a little insecure about this stuff. Well, for those of you who don't remember, Fudgy Bear lives in the forests and caves of Baraboo with Mama Bear and Papa Bear and his brother and sister, Arabica and Espresso, as well as Grandpa Bear. So they're a big family. Well, what are bears doing right now when it's so cold outside? What are they doing, Skylar? They're hibernating, right? So I had to wake Fudgy Bear up and bring him here. And he had to be convinced, but now he's glad that he's with you guys. He has been dreaming happy, happy dreams about how the year has ended. Because when the trees started to change red and yellow and orange in the fall, the oldest bear in the village called all the bears together and she said, "You all have worked so hard on the harvest. You've brought in so much honey and so many nuts and berries that we don't have to worry about having enough food. We know that we'll be fine all the way till spring comes. So we need to pause and thank one another for all that hard work." So they decided that they were going to throw a great big party. The eldest bear said, "I will cook an enormous banquet for you if all the bear families will just do one thing. And that is, I want each of you to bring a jug of your sweetest apple cider to share with all the other bears. Will you do that for me?" And all the bears said, of course, we'd be happy to help. We'd be happy to share our cider." Well, not long after that conversation, Papa Bear started to feel kind of angry at himself, because he wished that he had not agreed to give away his cider. See, Papa Bear really likes apple cider. And the apples weren't going to become ripe for many more months, so that was one less jug that he could have for himself. But he thought of a clever plan. He said to himself, "You know, when all the bears gather together, we're going to pour our jugs of cider into a great big bowl so that it's all mixed together. And that's what we'll be filling our cups from. I think I know a way that I can keep our cider all to myself." So he went to the spring where the bear families all get their drinking water, and he filled the jug with clear water. Well, Fudgy Bear helped him carry that heavy jug out to the picnic area on the big day. And as they approached, they could smell pancakes and bacon and maple syrup. And it was very distracting. But they were so happy to be together. There was dancing and there were songs and there were games. Finally, the oldest bear rang the great bell, and everybody found a place to sit. Cups were passed around, and everybody dipped their cup into the great bowl and waited until everybody had a drink. And they raised their glasses in a toast and drank from their cups. And what do you think they tasted? That bowl was filled with nothing but water. Every single bear family had filled their jug with water instead of cider. They were all so embarrassed, but
They drank their cups as if it were the sweetest cider they had ever had. While the eldest bear, being very, very wise, thought up a new saying that day. She said, "If you want to drink the sweet juice, you have to be willing to give some too." Well, Fudgy Bear thinks it's very much worth it to come get to see you guys when I come visit. So thank you for being such great listeners. We will send our young people off to religious education, and we will see you all later.
Thank you. Next on our items here is Connection and Reflection by Joe Provenzano. Is Joe here? Joe's not here. We will continue.
Be sure to ask Joe for his reflections when you see him next. It may be that the weather has interfered with his coming. I hope that everything's all right. I'd like to invite you now to pause in the middle of your busy lives, all that you do, simply to be. I invite you into a time of meditation, reflection, and prayer. Breathing and relaxing, we set aside all that distracts us from this moment, from being joyfully and fully with one another in this community. Breathing and relaxing, we feel our shoulders loosen, our faces open, and our hearts bloom. Breathing and relaxing, we open ourselves to a time of silence together. Spirit of life and love, whom we know by many names. We have so much to be mindful of and thankful for today. We hold up with special gratitude the history of this community and the lives of so many people who have worked hard to sustain it and help it to grow. For all these lives, for all these journeys, for this moment to join together in gratitude, this morning we pause to give thanks. Blessed be and amen. Now I'd like to invite you to join in singing our second hymn from your seats, hymn number 89 in your gray hymn book, "Come My Way, My Truth, My Life." reading this morning is from a sermon by my colleague, the Reverend Jay Leach, entitled The Infinite Enlargement of the Heart. The most radical, controversial, countercultural message that we offer in our particular liberal religion may not be about marriage equality or economic justice or environmental activism or any other of our social stances, as important as those are. Our most radical, controversial, countercultural message just may be our affirmation that each of us, every single individual one of us, is part of an interdependent web of all existence. To make such an affirmation with full integrity suggests that what's in it for me is directly, inextricably, completely linked to what's in it for us. If the web of existence of which we are part truly is interdependent, then there really is only the common good. Well-being is never private, is never an isolated, individual sort of thing. On Friday, I met with the stunned, shocked widow of one of our most active members, who suddenly, unexpectedly died on Wednesday afternoon. She doesn't need the freedom to find her own path right now. She wasn't coming to assert her personal position on some issue. She wasn't asking for the right to be a religious individualist. She desperately, desperately needs a community, a group of people whose interests are larger than self-interests, a congregation that can embody some belief that her well-being and our well-being are inextricably tied together. When we consider what happens to what we give gladly to our congregation, we feel that interdependence. Kids are taught with our money. Grieving families are cared for. Old prejudices are broken down. New self-images are built up. Beautiful music is offered with our money. Meals are delivered. Great fun is had. Minds are stirred, disturbed, changed. Hearts are lifted, bolstered, filled. Deep needs in and outside our walls are addressed. With our contributions, we do two things. We change lives and we change the world. And because I believe so deeply in our professed affirmation that we truly do live as part of an interdependent web of all existence, I know the common good is my good as well. We drink from wells we did not dig. We are warmed by fires we did not kindle. These ancient words from the Hebrew Scriptures remind us that for all of our celebration of the individual journey, for all the opportunities around us to be self-interested consumers, we are still very much indebted to and shaped by an interdependent web of giving and receiving. 2.5 years ago, I spoke here at Lake Country about cultivating a philosophy of abundance, finding satisfaction and gratitude in what we have, and withdrawing from the unhappy constant scramble for more. Today, I want to explore with you how we spread our individual abundance throughout an institution, about how our personal journeys for fulfillment might connect with a spiritual community in a meaningful and sustainable way. One of the most important resources I've used in my journey
as a minister over the past 20 years has been psychologist James Fowler's book, Stages of Faith. Not only did it affirm my intuition as a young man that religion was a journey rather than a destination, it also articulated what the point of this journey was. Fowler opens his book by posing these important questions. What are you spending and being spent for? What commands and receives your best time, your best energy? What causes, dreams, goals, and institutions are you pouring out your life for? As you live your life, what power or powers do you dread? What power or powers do you rely upon or trust? To what or whom are you committed in life? In death? With whom do you share your most sacred and private hopes for your life and for the lives of those you love? And what are those most sacred hopes, those most compelling goals and purposes in your life? I was just starting to recognize the importance of questions like these when I first attended a Unitarian Universalist worship service in 1986. My family had left the Catholic Church when I was six, and I had learned to be suspicious about the power of religious institutions. I first visited a UU congregation because a friend of mine was conducting a service there about censorship, and I was impressed that all the people there seemed to see the world in the same way that I did. And so I began to attend each Sunday, although I was constantly on the lookout for signs that the church was trying to tell me what to believe. I sang along with the hymns, although I skipped the words I didn't agree with, especially the G word. I got a lot out of being a member of my congregation, in spite of my prickliness, but my involvement was mostly about getting my personal needs met. It may have even been me that they were talking about when some wisecracker created the joke, Unitarian Universalism. It's spelled U-U, but it's pronounced me-me. Looking back on my first couple of years as a Unitarian Universalist, I understand now how typical my relationship with our movement was. There are some people who discover our congregations in a time of need, such as when families are seeking a minister to officiate a wedding or a memorial service. But many people's first attraction to Unitarian Universalism is in search for what acceptance and personal satisfaction it can provide us as seekers. After a while, though, I noticed my priorities beginning to shift, such that Unitarian Universalism was making me a different person even when I was outside of church. I started to focus less on what my congregation could give me and more on how my skills and gifts could find a place there. I started to participate in leadership of my congregation, and the board invited me to join them as worship chair, thinking that my interests might be a good fit for that position, and, well, you see where that has led me. I had recognized that I had gifts that needed to be given, and that my congregation was one particular place where I could share them. Even after years in the ministry, though, I'm struck at how much I need reminders of this. Working on my doctorate for the last several years, my primary connection with Unitarian Universalism has been when I'm preaching at a different congregation each Sunday. And I'm realizing now how much I miss the depth of an ongoing connection and commitments. And so I've rejoined my previous congregation in Madison as a member, and it has been giving me so much joy to be participating in that particular community again. One of the things I've come to realize from preaching and consulting with congregations is that my evolving experience of membership is not unusual. Just as our individual beliefs and journeys change over the course of our lives, we also experience changes in our connection to a spiritual community and what that means for us. When I and other leaders attended a workshop several years ago about how to better support our members throughout their journeys, we learned about four useful member categories. Newcomers to our congregations might be thought of as window shoppers. They're looking for a community that feels like a match for their interests and needs. They'll want to know what this community stands for, what kinds of people are accepted here, and what will be expected of them. For those of you who are shopping around for a place that will respect and support your journey, I hope that you'll find this congregation a safe and hospitable place to grow, and I hope that you'll come back for more. As people become regular attendees of our programs and services, they often do so as consumers, thinking of these activities as something that they've purchased with their financial support of the congregation. Their contributions often reflect mental calculations of how much it would cost to take the family out to a movie instead. Seriously. And they judge our programs by the same criteria by which they would evaluate a lecture or a concert. In some ways, this way of thinking is great because it motivates members to help pay the bills. But it overlooks the ways in which a spiritual community is quite different from attending a lecture or a conference. Also, when the inevitable happens and a program disappoints us or the institution fails us, it's tempting to feel cheated, that we're not getting our money's worth or that a contract has been broken. What we see when our relationship deepens into greater trust and mutuality is that our consumers become shareholders. They feel a sense of responsibility for the quality of the institution, and their giving happens out of a sense of gratitude rather than as a transaction. These leaders have a stake in a larger cause, and they take their involvement seriously because they recognize that the transformation that happened in them can be made available for others as well. Now, if we can keep from burning out these folks with our enthusiasm for their skills and their generosity, many of them take their membership to the next level as investors. These leaders understand their membership and their giving as part of the long-term success of the congregation and Unitarian Universalism as a whole. They think about their gifts as something that will outlive them. One colleague compares it to supporting the local public library. Even though I might not be there all the time, it's important to ensure that it survives in my community so that future generations will benefit from it too. Now, this set of four categories is just one way of thinking about how our relationship with a community can change over time. It might sound like I'm suggesting that there's an ideal form of membership, that we should all be investors. But our congregations always contain all four kinds of people. And this is why we mustn't settle for a one-size-fits-all mentality about how we function as a community. James Fowler's work on faith development reminds us that we move from stage to stage when it's the right time for us, and that this right time depends partly on what else is going on in our lives. One of my favorite responsibilities when I was minister at First Unitarian in Madison was the fourth session of our new UU program for people considering becoming official members. The previous sessions, having talked about Unitarian and Universalist history, the history of the congregation, our culture of lifespan religious education, and how to get more involved, my session was about the expectations of membership, including the financial expectations. I want to elaborate a bit on a concept that I developed with that group of people the concept of stewardship, which is more than the annual pledge drive, more than the building campaign, more, in fact, than any focus on simply dollars, because it is really about giving and receiving in a much broader sense. I urged our potential members to think about their stewardship in terms of the three T's: time, talent, and treasure. And I encouraged them to think about how they could participate on all three of these levels. I explained that we understood how their ability to contribute varies from person to person and even from time to time over the course of their lives. Now, I had raised this particular point because I was concerned that our congregation in Madison had developed a reputation of being strictly upper middle class. And I really, really wanted people who were working class and people of limited means to understand that they were welcome in our congregation too. But I later came to realize that it was important, in fact, not to make assumptions about people's ability to give any of those three T's, not just dollars, but also time and talent. The bottom line is that the community is strengthened when generosity is a part of our spiritual practice. And the community is diminished when we choose to stay away or withhold our gifts. Pluck one web of the one strand of the interdependent web, and the whole system reverberates in response. One of the leadership roles that I occupy in the Unitarian Universalist movement is on the board of the Partner Church Council, which matches congregations in the United States and Canada one-on-one with congregations in Transylvania, the Philippines, India, and Africa. All of us on the board became leaders because of the life-changing experiences we've had as part of the Partner Church program. But we also struggle with how to communicate those deeply felt experiences to people who haven't experienced them. At our winter meeting in Washington, D.C., just a couple of weeks ago, the Reverend Diane Rollert was leading the board in a brief worship service, and she shared with us an exercise she called the Love Bowl. Holding out an empty bowl, she said, "This is a love bowl. It's empty now, but I'm going to pass it around the circle and give each of us an opportunity to fill it with love." Perhaps you can recall a moment in your international connections when you were the recipient of an overwhelming amount of love, and you can share some of it with the bowl from that memory. And so as we passed the bowl around, each of us mimed putting some love into it and sharing aloud a time in our international work when our hearts had been stretched and expanded by an especially eye-opening encounter. I thought especially of my 2 years in Transylvania and the many, many moments of generosity that I had been the recipient of from people who had so little material goods to give. When the bowl returned to Diane, she noted how full it felt, and more than one of us were brushing away tears at the memory of the love that we had received, but also at the exercise of the love bowl. Not because we had received a full bowl that others had filled, but at the experience of making our own contributions to that fullness. Stewardship is about more than just paying the bills. It is about pouring some of our love into a bowl that others are also filling, and understanding our various ways of giving as a spiritual practice, as important to our wholeness as breathing deeply, finding our center, or sharing compassion. American Buddhist teacher Jack Kornfield wrote, "Spiritual maturity is an acceptance of life in relationship." And I believe that the culture and practice of stewardship ultimately offers us a more substantial and transformative journey than our individual practices can. Because religious institutions have not always handled our gifts responsibly and respectfully, I want first of all to apologize for the ways in which organized religion has not lived up to these promises. It's no wonder that so many of us are suspicious about the combination of religion and money. I think that it's important for us to hold up the kind of institution that does successfully foster a culture of healthy stewardship. First of all, a healthy community trusts the discernment of its members to give what they can, depending on their circumstances. And it also encourages its members to take this stewardship completely seriously. Second, a healthy community does a good job of keeping its members informed about how our gifts are being used. And its members reward that transparency with trust in our leadership. Third, a healthy community keeps its culture of generosity sustainable by protecting its leaders from burnout, by preparing the next generation of leaders and training others to take a turn at the helm. Fourth, a healthy community understands that some degree of risk is always required to put our values into action, and that an atmosphere of scarcity and anxiety makes it so much more difficult to pursue our dreams. Fifth and lastly, a healthy community responds gently when things don't go as planned, as they very often will, because you and your leaders and your soon-to-be minister are all, after all, only human. One of the things you should know is how much I brag about this congregation when I speak with other Unitarian Universalist leaders, because you are already exemplifying healthy and visionary community in so many ways. It's easy for me to name these potential pitfalls because you've already done such a great job of thinking about them yourselves. It's so clear from your enthusiastic canvas materials that you're already developing and sustaining healthy stewardship attitudes, earning the trust of your membership, supporting your leaders in their work, sticking your neck out and taking the leap to occupy this beautiful building and call a full-time minister, and learning how to treat one another with care, even when outcomes aren't perfect. It's such a pleasure to be able to tell the larger Unitarian Universalist world about what you're doing here, not as a community that has no struggles, but as a community that responds to its struggles with vision and commitment. Ultimately, this service is not simply about asking you to give more money, but to reorient our understanding of what membership in a community like this one could feel like. I'm asking you to consider a culture of stewardship, not only because I know from experience that generosity naturally follows gratitude, but that your own journey can be transformed by practicing stewardship in such a visionary place as this. May the years ahead of us be so bright and full as the present that you have helped to create. May it be so. And we're doing fairly well on time. What do you think? Okay. Well, then let's invite people into a brief dialogue. I have a microphone here for someone to pass around. And if you would like to share your comments or questions about stewardship, and what you're doing here. I would love to talk with you about that. I'll also be at coffee hour, of course, and you guys already know how much I like to talk at coffee hour. I always worry that I've talked them out. Can it be? Pancake brain. That is specifically why I did not have some before the service.
Thanks, God, really, for your words. And I just want to mention the book that we're reading for the book discussion with our minister is The House of Hope, written by two Unitarians, not four Unitarians, really, for the world. Well, one Methodist? Oh.
Maybe a future Unitarian.
Rebecca, okay. on the verge, I'm
that
sure.
That happens sometimes.
On the verge.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I'm just starting to read it. It's a really wonderful book, and talking about how our individual search, it's really not about, it's doing it in community that's so important,
right,
and
right.
Bringing the importance of liberal religion back to the table here. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. I was talking with Reverend Jim before the service about how fulfilling it has been to come back to my old congregation as a member. I've missed so much that experience. I mean, I love so much the preaching that I get to do with congregations like this one. But to be in a community week after week and connecting my journey with their journeys and my commitment with their commitments, I'd really forgotten. I've been a minister so long that I had forgotten how that feels, and that was a wonderful wake-up call to me, so thank you for reminding me of that. John, good
Scott,
morning.
John.
Good to see you.
Thank you so much for your words. I could really feel and empathize so well with how you describe the different ways a person sort of moves within membership, and it really, really struck me. I really like that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And again, we always have all four kinds of membership dynamics happening in our congregations. And so how we talk about involvement and how we talk about giving is most successful when we think about the different places on that journey that our members are likely to be. It's not all about encouraging everyone to be investors. We become what we need to become when it's right for us. I believe Al would like the microphone. or you're pointing.
Al here. Pride is a difficult thing. But it's hard not to feel pride for
yes.
This community. Comparison is also a dangerous thing. But mixing the two, just for your thoughts, not trying to be competitive, my wonderful older sister Kay was here last week. She's visited our church before we had a building. She's a member of a Unitarian church in the suburbs of Philadelphia. It's about a 50-year-old year congregation. They have about 400 members. Comparisons. They're not growing. Their membership has very few children. They have probably 35 to 40 kids in RE. We're not even a quarter of that size, and yet our RE program is 2 to 3 times their size. One of the strong feel-goods that I have is the youth of this church many of you have aligned with me with feeling those transitional services are perhaps as meaningful as any other service you've attended because of the vision and hope that we feel when we see those young people transitioning and stepping out. To me, that is one of the big pulsing hearts of this church. And it does make us unique, not just in comparison to my sister's UU congregation, and not just in comparison to other churches, other religious practices, but in my belief that we are foundationally trying to make a better change, a bigger difference, a better world.
Thank you, Al.
Alan, I did not plan this, but I wanted to talk about the children and how, as adults, we recognize stewardship, I think, sometimes in each other. But whether they speak it or not, the kids see it too regularly. This weekend has been a really big one for a lot of the youth in our church. OWL started with their kickoff overnight on Friday night. And coming in as a sleep angel, never heard that name before, but as a sleep angel, I just was able to see both in at nighttime and in the morning how several of our adult members just gave so much of themselves and their time to share a really momentous beginning with our teenagers about thinking about themselves and their lives and who they are going to be and who they are and what that means. And, you know, just the fact that Maya rode home with my husband afterwards and said, boy, that's a conversation you never want to have with a parent. And that was about the extent of it, but it was hilarious to just know that she is in a place where she can at least hear that conversation, participate in that conversation with people, not her parents, and have it be okay, was pretty huge. And then also the neighboring faiths today, with Cole being able to hopefully, weather permitting, go to the Hindu temple with other adults. And I, you know, as someone that's worked in RE here and at other churches, and also just taking a break and seeing others step forward and give their time, treasures, and talents to this church, we are modeling for the kids. And they might not have the pocketbooks that open, but they are benefiting so much, and whether they say it or not, they are enriched by all that we do. So keep sharing that time, treasures, and talents, and it's so appreciated.
Thank you. Wonderfully said. Let's continue our conversation over coffee and leftover bacon, if there's any. I'd like to invite you now into the time for our offering. And I'd like you to hold in mind all that has been said and done this morning. That this act of giving is potentially an expression of great symbolism for each of us. And I hope that you are as proud and as grateful for all that your generosity has made possible so far. You do make a difference. Thank you so much.
like to invite you to open your hymn books to the very back, to number 680, and join me in a congregational affirmation by the Reverend Barbara Peskin. Because of those who came before, we are. In spite of their failings, we believe. Because of and in spite of the horizons of their vision, we too dream. I invite you to rise as you're able and join in singing together our closing hymn, number 128, For All That Is Our Life.
For all that is our life, our thanks and praise, for all life is a gift which we are called to use to build the common good and make our own days glad. For needs which others serve, for services we give, for work and its rewards, for hours of rest and love, we come with praise and thanks. For all that is our life, for sorrow we must bear, for failures, pain and loss, for each new thing we learn, for fearful hours that pass, we come with praise and thanks. For all that is our life, for all that is our life, we sing our thanks and praise. For all life is a gift which we are called to use to build the common good and make our own days glad.
May the spirit of abundance pervade our lives, not in the accumulation of mere possessions, but in the cultivation of those values and vision that makes our life meaningful. For all that this community has made possible, and for its bright future always dawning, may the people of this assembly join me in saying thank you. Thank you.